And in a moment, we will be talking with Zachariah Sitchin, a very distinguished individual who, as you know, captured my attention with his book, The 12th Planet, and then his series of other works as well. In a moment, Zachariah Sitchin on Coast to Coast AM. Well, a couple of weeks from now in Los Angeles, I will have the honor of being with Zachariah Sitchin as he receives his Lifetime Achievement Award from the Conscious Life Expo. And get to meet him up front and personal. And here he is on Coast to Coast, Zachariah Sitchin. Zachariah, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning, George.
Good morning. Gosh, you have done some incredible work over the ages. I mean, absolutely stacked. And you don't stop. You keep going with more fantastic mysteries.
Well, the mystery is who keeps whom going. Do I keep my research and writing going, or is it the other way around?
Yeah.
That the writing, the research, and of course meeting the people who read the books, is that what keeps me going?
When you wrote The 12th Planet years ago, based on your research of the Sumerian clay tablets, how did you even decide to investigate that? What happened there?
Well, the story, I think, has been told even on your program. I asked a question about what I considered at the time a mistranslation of biblical verses about there being giants upon the earth who married the daughters of men, and that was one thing, but the other thing to take a broader view, which I think is the right way to look at it, is that there have been, by the time I got around to a decision to start writing about the subject that interested me, there were already some other books around even before our good friend Eric von Däniken. Mm-hmm. They were in France, a few authors, some of their works were translated. I think a book titled The Morning of the Magicians by Jacques, forget his last name. So the idea, and of course there were the plans to go to the moon, and the realization that if we are not unique, at least our little ball of dust called Earth is not unique, and then there are other things to find out in space, and certainly in our own solar system. And having been educated in London,
yeah,
to approach everything with a more materialistic question at the London School of Economics, and that is there's always had to be a reason, a real reason. The attitude was that the Crusades were really not motivated by religion, but by the need to keep open the Silk Road and such other approaches. So the question was, if Earth was visited in the ancient past by people, whatever we want to call them, ancient astronauts, aliens, whatever,
yeah,
was visited by Earth, why did they come here? And then if they did come, from where did they come?
Mm-hmm.
How did they come? What kind of spacecraft did they have? So what were their motives? What were their reasons? From where did they come? And who they were? So this whole notion, for example, of ancient gods, that, you know, people in antiquity believed in gods. Who were they? How were they envisioned?
Yes.
Were they for real? And so saw the whole business of mythology became for me a study of reality. Who came? Why did they come? Who they were? What did they do here? Did they stay? Did they come and go? Are they still here? Did they leave? So instead of with a nebulous mythology, it all turned to me to a study of actual events. And that, I think, is what distinguished my writings more than the fact that I was able to read the tablets and told people what they say.
And the writings, Zechariah, are profound. I mean, I remember when I first picked up The 12th Planet, I couldn't put it down. Then I had to get into the next book and the next one and the next one. I mean, it was riveting for me.
Thank you.
And for those brand new people to Coast to Coast, let me tell you that years ago, Zechariah Sitchin did research of Sumerian clay tablets, which we would now call modern day Iraq, and he interpreted them, these ancient texts, to say that there's this planet in our solar system that comes close to Earth every 3,600 years, and that there were inhabitants from that planet who came here to mine gold, so they could put gold particles up in their atmosphere to help their atmosphere, and that they genetically made us because they wanted slave labor. And, you know, when you look at the Bible, Zechariah, if depending on how you interpret it, it echoes some of the things you have researched. I mean, some of the similarities are very close, aren't they?
Well, they are indeed, George, so close that people, especially those who read my books, understand it. But I was going to reveal it at our get together at the Conscious Life Expo in about 10-12 days from now. But I can, you know, because I really think greatly of your program, I can tell you that there is a new Sitchin book coming. And
new theory?
No, not the new theory, but it is one that starts by comparing the biblical tales of the creation of the Adam and then what happened later.
Wonderful.
And the story of the deluge, etc. Compare them not only as similar stories, but compares verses and the use of words to show that the Hebrew is exact translation of specific Sumerian texts that I identify and say these words are an exact translation into Hebrew by the ancient compilers of the Hebrew Bible from the Sumerian tablet number so-and-so and so-and-so in this and that museum.
These tablets, I hope they're still protected and guarded, Zechariah.
Yes,
are they?
Yeah, they are.
Excellent. And you know, it does not negate one's belief in God to believe this theory, this possibility that we were visited, that we were genetically altered, because eventually you have to ask, how did they get here? Who made them?
That's exactly the question. If they made us, who made them?
Exactly. How does science react to this theory? I would think that they should be all over it. It's almost like a guide for them. But they're afraid,
well,
aren't they?
You really raise a very pertinent question, because now for almost 30 or 35 years that I have been making all these ancient pieces of data available and urging at every opportunity sciences in genetics, in health studies, in astronomy, etc., to take it seriously. But of course, as you and your listeners know, everything was poo-pooed. Well, this is mythology. You know, those ancient people were so primitive. They were stupid. They saw the lightning, so they said this is God, and so on. Rather than take information which is valuable and use it in our own modern science. But I'm sure you know that through me there's been a major breakthrough a few weeks ago. The New York Times devoted the whole page to me.
Yes, that was dramatic.
And of course, for me, it's a great thing to be to be written up in the New York Times at all. You know, it's, you have to be dead first to achieve that in the obituary columns. But they did. They did. They sent a reporter who spent days with me. They sent a star photographer to take pictures, etc. But more, I hope I'm right in that. More than an achievement for me, I think this article represents a major crossing of the threshold by the major or a major mainstream media entity. For the New York Times to devote a page and not only to tell my story, who I am, you know, I'm so. Such and such years, so many years old, and I eat here and I do that. To title the whole thing, I'm looking at it, Origin of the Species from an Alien View. And
that's dramatic. That's big.
For the New York Times to have a page with such a headline, and then they say in the subtitle, he has sold millions of books telling of visitors from the planet Nibiru who set humans on their evolutionary path. So for the New York Times to write about the being, according to Sitchin, but or the Sumerians, there being another planet, Nibiru, this is an evolution, George.
Yeah.
So... I think that this is a harbinger of a change of attitudes. And I think that what has been happening before, for example, there is a group of astronomers in France at an observatory that is placed at, in Nice, I think, on the Riviera. And the head of that group, they're called, in English, they're spelled the NICE group. So people say, people think it means the nice group.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's Nice. And they openly talk about there being another planet. And in the interviews, the French papers, show the design of an orbit, and I look at it and I say, this is an exact copy of the orbit of Nibiru shown in the book. And when I'm not making it up, George, when I place their drawing on my drawing, you see that it was just copied.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's been this slow process of accepting without admitting, yes, there may be this and there may be that, and let's look at that and so on. And I think that this article in the New York Times is sort of a signal that says, it's okay, fellows, from now on, it's okay to take that ancient evidence seriously.
And when this planet comes by, it seems to always create some kind of havoc or catastrophe on this planet. Are we close, Zachariah, to this planet Nibiru coming back around again?
No, we. I don't know if fortunately or unfortunately, but no. The last time, and that is explained in detail and with precision, and again, mm-hmm. with ancient tablets and all the paraphernalia that come with my writings. No, the last time it passed near our vicinity was about 550 BC, 550 BC, and with an orbit of about 3,600 years.
I think 3,100 years
now
away.
It's more. It's down to 3,450. So we still have a time to go. But the point is that, and that was one of the first questions that I asked in my first book, and that is, if aliens visited the Earth, was it a one-time visit? Were they space travelers who saw an interesting planet and said, let's stop and take a look? Or did they have a spacecraft run into trouble and they looked for some solid ground where to crash land? Or did they come and go? Now, all the evidence, the biblical, the Sumerian, the Mayan, I mean, all the so-called mythologies and ancient writings say of gods who kept coming and going, and when they left, they said, we will return. And this is the basis of the Mayan prophecies, the promise to return. So if they came and went and came and went, it means that they could come and go from time to time, whether their planet was, so many miles away from mm-hmm. us or so more many miles away from us. So their visits here were not limited to a one-time event only when the planet was here. So when we are dealing with the biblical prophecies and other prophecies, we really should look at what the biblical prophets separated between prophecies of the day of the Lord, the celestial Lord, which happened once in so many years, and the end of days, which is the periodical coming and return. So we can expect a return much sooner, and if people will come and listen to you and me at the expo, I will tell them when I think the next time will be.
In a Zechariah special, the tribute will also be done at a lunch. And there's information on his website and on ours, our calendar schedule that you'll see at coasttocoastam.com. And let me spell his website for you. It's sitchin.com. sitchin.com. And let me tell you something. Of everything I've read on the topics we've talked about on Coast to Coast over the years, this theory and this investigation that he's done with the ancient text is one of the best I've ever seen. And he has a series of works. And as he said, he's got a new one coming out. So, Zechariah, I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. He's going to be 90 years old this year. Isn't that amazing? Open lines. Let me give you the phone numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time callers, 818-501-4721. The wildcard line is 818-501-4109. And a special hotline just for police officers. I'll tell you why in a moment. 818-817-0021. Oh, you know, we're installing a Skype line for you, for those of you who want to dial us up on that. So in addition to the wildcard line and the international line, east-west, first-time caller lines, we'll have the Skype line for you. Now, that's special, you know, because you put in the phone number, I guess, of calling me. So it's George 97313. That's the Skype line, all right? It'll be George 97313, and you'll be able to get through us. Should be up and running in about 2 weeks, I think. George 97313. And we've got open lines for you this half hour. And thanks again to Zechariah Sitchin for staying up so late. He's up there on the East Coast, 90 years old, but I'm going to see him in less than 2 weeks at the Conscious Life Expo, as he is receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award there. And there is a lunch for Zechariah. So if you want to get to it, just go to my website at coasttocoastam.com. Now, I have a friend of mine who was speeding a few days ago, and he got a ticket. He deserved it. He did. But he was telling me something that I found fascinating. And his theory is, during this tough economic times, he said more and more police officers tend to write more tickets than let people go. He said in the old days, they'd let you go generally with a little warning or something. He said nowadays, they're more apt to write the ticket. I'm not sure about that. So I'm going to open up a police special hotline just for you cops out there. That's 818-817-0021. And welcome back to the open line portion of Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to the police hotline. We've got Debbie in Ohio. Is it Officer Debbie?
Yes, it is. And I'm actually on the way home from work right now and listen to you every morning. I do not write any more tickets at this time. Actually, I probably write fewer tickets. The city's growing. We have less police officers to do more work with. And we have to spend a lot of other time besides traffic.
Yeah, well, that's good. Now, so would you say that's universal throughout the country or just primarily where you are, Debbie?
I would say that's universal from what I know. Police officers are expected to do more work than they used to do. Just like any other job, you have, you know, more handed on your plate with less people to work and more population.
Do you have those traffic cameras out in your neck of the woods?
Yes, we do.
Have you seen that reduce the police force, or is this just another way for the city to make some money?
It's just another way for the city to make money.
Yeah. So I bet you wish they weren't plugged in, huh?
Well, they're mainly in our downtown area, and everybody knows they're there usually. That does travel through the area, unless, of course, you're not from the area. You may get hit with those.
Absolutely. Thanks, Debbie, for what you do.
All right. Thank you. Have a nice night.
Okay. All right. So that's a police officer in Ohio who's not writing any more tickets. As a matter of fact, less, which is contrary to what my buddy who got a ticket for speeding. I don't know how fast he was going, 10 over or so. And it was not me, by the way. You know how sometimes people say, hey, I got a friend who did this, and it's really you? It was not me. Next up, we go to Steve in Youngstown, Ohio, first-time caller. Hey, Steve, welcome to the show. Steven? Well, Steven is not there. Gosh, Steve, you may try again. It'll be another year or so before you get in. But in Midland, Michigan, Liam, you're there.
Hey, George. Good morning.
You too.
You said Richard Hoagland was going to be on tomorrow night?
Yeah, for a couple hours. We're going to get his input on the NASA situation and the budget.
Oh, good. I hope he talks about some Norway stuff. There's a little more
going
on in the sky than what's been getting told.
Absolutely. And he'll have a lot posted up on his enterprisemission.com website as well.
Good, good. Hey, I was hoping I could just point out a fact about Nibiru. A lot of the astronomers, you know, Phil Plait, saying that, you know, there's no way to detect it, that it's not there. And I propose that perhaps it's an intergalactic space station, you know, the size of a planet.
Like the Starship, huh?
Yeah. You know, Richard Oakland even said, I think one of Jupiter's moon, if I'm pronouncing it right, Iapetus or something, it may have been an artificial moon. You know, the structure of it was that, like a soccer ball. You know, and I think it's plausible because there's no way of anybody, you know, detecting this planet. But I do believe it exists.
Well, that's an interesting theory. Yeah, the Iapetus, which is one of the moons out there, looks like one of those walnuts with a ridge all the way around it that goes way up there. We've got Polly in Texas City, Texas, next on Coast to Coast. Hi, Polly.
Hi. Fascinating show.
It's different.
You know, just a little follow-up on that Nibiru thing. They had a program on television where they were trying to interview the head of Scientology, and one of the previous members that apparently expelled himself from the group said that was the whole premise of what their religious philosophy was about, and that if anybody even said the name Nibiru, that they would surely die. In other words, they would contract pneumonia or something bronchial.
Whoa.
And the karma aspects of it would be just, you know, absolutely devastating. So I don't know if anyone else has heard about that, but I'll tell you, it sure was an eye-opener, you know, for me, because, you know, I try to study as many different religions as I can to try to understand, you know, people, but, you know, under the circumstances, the Scientology thing sure does sound like something intergalactic.
It sure does.
Yeah. And I appreciate that you took my call. Thanks.
Okay, Pauly. The work of Sitchin, absolutely staggering. If you haven't read The 12th Planet, and you can get it on a paperback now on Amazon, well worth the read. Let's go now to Police Officer Will in North Texas. Hey, Officer Will, how are you?
Oh, doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good. So how about you? Are you writing more or less tickets because of the economy these days?
Well, you see, I generally, it's based on the person. You know, tickets aren't one of those things where the officer has to write a ticket. You know, it's by each person, each officer has the ability to say, yeah, I can write them a ticket or give them a warning. So generally, I tend to write a ticket according to how the person reacts to the traffic stop, because of course the traffic stop is done because you've done something, you know, that you've broken a traffic law.
Right. Right.
Now, generally speaking, though, you don't want to just screw with anybody, because you know you're a person too, and you know just because you're allowed to write tickets doesn't mean you have to.
Yeah. You know, if they're, you know, apologetic, I think in you know, handling this thing like an adult, you might be apt to let them go then, I guess.
Oh yeah, more often than not. I mean, of course, you know, if you're doing 100 miles an hour in a 30 mile an hour zone, that's probably not one of those, even if you're apologetic, you know, as long as you're not going to an emergency yourself.
Yeah. Do you ever get anybody who's belligerent to you, Will, that, and you go, you know what, this one's getting a ticket no matter what?
Well, all the time people are belligerent, but it really pushes you to the point where you're like, you know what, I'm trying to help this person. You know, you stop them, you may have prevented them from being in an accident or from being, you know, in anything bad that could have happened to them. And if they're being real mean and belligerent, you know, there's not much that you can do outside of it. You know, you've already tried to help them as much as you can. And
yeah,
you know, you treat people the way you want to be treated. If you want to be treated, you know, like mean, then you're going to be treated mean yourself, I guess.
What's been the weirdest thing in your career that you've had to handle?
That I've had to handle?
Yeah. Is there one of those stories that you tell everybody back when you come back to the police station?
I really like to talk about it, but as of right now, I can't. There's been a couple of them that are pretty bad, but
right.
I'll leave you with this one. I had this one guy that I pulled over, and he decided to take me to court on his ticket, and he was speeding, and he was yelling at me the entire time, and I was just very calm and collective about it. You know, I said, sir, you know, there's no reason for this language. You know, he was doing a 82 and a 60.
Jeez.
I was like, sir, you're just going to get a ticket. You know, it's no big deal if you don't believe you're at fault. You know, show up to your court date and just plead not guilty, and I'll show up and you can plead your case. He ended up showing up, and he thought that I pulled him over for just being a suspicious vehicle, and I still to this day don't know what a suspicious vehicle is. But that's what his argument was. You pulled me over for being a suspicious vehicle, and the judge was like, no, if you're doing 82 and a 60, you got pulled over for speeding, you got a ticket for speeding. So he had to.
So they nailed him, huh?
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, some people are like that. You just can't. You just can't pull a person over for what it is. You got to pull them over for being suspicious. You know, a lot of, you know, people tend to judge police officers more harshly than they would judge themselves. So,
absolutely. And the best tips, I guess, just, you know what, be honest with the police officer and be, you know, and just answer his questions, and you might get out of it, huh?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Generally speaking, yeah, we're just like everybody else. We all have families and friends too. So we tend to be kind to the people who are kind to us.
As long as they're not drinking and they go, but Ashrafer, I wasn't driving like that.
That's right. You can't drink and drive. Somebody dies when that happens.
You got it. Thanks, Will.
You have a good night.
Okay. Next up, we go to Albuquerque, New Mexico. First time caller. Hey, Britt, it's your turn.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
Once again, we spoke once before. I can't believe that I've made it on. I've tried for years, and then all of a sudden I get twice in 1 month. It's amazing.
You're lucky, but don't, you know, Don't count those eggs before they hatch.
I know. Well, I just wanted to tell you also that, you know, you've been just a beacon of light for me. I lost the use of my right hand last year, and with that came a lot of long nights, and you've really helped me with that. So I just wanted to say thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I have one question for you. Your guest, Richard, I've forgotten his last name.
Richard Dolan.
He touched on something that I have thought about for many years, and I never heard anybody say the question of spottings of ETs and stuff like that in the ocean. And I have always wondered, you know, if we spent as much, put as forth as much effort as we do with the space program, if we did that with exploring our own oceans, just the amount of knowledge that we might obtain with that, and if maybe there are other life forms actually doing that before we're able to do that, just blows my mind.
Well, there's so many things going on beneath the seas that we just don't know about. I mean, I'm fascinated with these new species that they find down there. You know?
And imagine it with these people, with these ETs' capabilities, what do they know about our oceans that we don't, if they're already exploring it? Have people actually been witness to, are there people who say, I saw something in the ocean?
Oh, absolutely. We get incredible stories of submersible UFO cases.
Oh, that is amazing. That's amazing.
There was one account with some sailors were on a ship, and they saw this thing smash right through the water and then just take off.
Wow.
Just like that. I mean, that would be awe-inspiring. That would be kind of scary, too, I guess.
Absolutely.
All right, Britt, thanks.
Well, thank you.
Next up, we go to Hot Springs, Arkansas. Margel, it's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good morning.
You too.
I was just calling in a comment about what Zachariah was saying, how I'm a Jewish apologist, and so when he was talking about how the Hebrew people back in the day were copying Babylonian texts and Iraqi old cuneiform texts, I kind of have a different angle of that.
Okay.
Yes, around at the same time, around King David and when Joshua came out of, out of the wilderness with Moses and Moses died and went into the promised land, the people of Anak or the Nephilim were around, and this was approximately around 1400-1500 BCE. And so, you had all these giants in the land, and, the Greeks had the same thing, like they're called Titans there. And,
right, right.
And so forth. And so, by Hebrew people explained them to be fallen angels, and so where other cultures like the Titans would be sons of the gods and so forth, because how powerful they were, they're for us they'd be angels and they have these particular powers.
Sure.
And so we believe that because these angels are coming down doing mayhem, they're also deceiving particular cultures. So for us, they're lying to like the Babylonian people, and so they just kind of write down what they write down and what they say. But for us, we have prophets who directly hears from Hashem or from the Lord, and that debunks all the writings, so that's why our take is totally different from their take. So it might have some similarities where we say that, they came down, they slept with women and had these giants, and like even Goliath is one of these children.
Well,
and
see, what's fascinating to me, too, are these similarities, between
definitely
all these cultures. I mean, something obviously happened a long time ago.
What I'm dying for is, and actually praying for, is one day these archaeologists will dig up some of these maps of, 13-foot people, to prove it.
I've seen some pictures of one, but I'm not sure it's I think it might be a Photoshop.
Yeah, I looked at one, and I said, that's definitely a false one, because you can see the background is just, how can dry bones be together as a stand-up skeleton with wire in it? You can't do it.
That's a good point. Hey, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Tucson, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Scott, You're up with us.
Hi, Jordan.
Hey.
Good morning.
You too.
I don't know if you remember a couple months ago, I called in and I forget who your guest was at the time, but I talked about how it seems that fiction writers seem to tap into something, maybe because they're in a meditative state or something without even realizing it. The example I gave at the time was the gentleman who wrote the book that kind of predicted the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting because I came across something else recently that kind of relates to, in my mind, to Zachary Sitchin's work in a roundabout way. There was a book that was published in the early 60s called The Haunted Stars. And it's a science fiction novel, which I hadn't had a chance to read yet. But the premise is that in the near future, like a couple hundred years from now, they're exploring the moon or digging up, and they find the remains of an ancient base. And they have to bring the protagonist in because he's a language expert, because the writing is similar to Sumerian.
Ah.
Now, here's a book, you know, in the early 60s, I think 1960-61 is when this book was published. And I can't remember the name of the author, but I keep coming back to that whole idea. It's like, well, somehow people are tapping into things without knowing it, you know, when they're writing some of this stuff, in bits and pieces anyway, you know. Maybe some of it also comes up in bits and pieces in dreams.
What was that old movie from Earth to the Moon where the astronauts landed on the moon and they saw an old British flag from the 1800s? And the whole movie was based on the fact that we've been there before.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
Oh, that's a classic. That is one of the old classics.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it sure is.
And one of the quick points about submersibles, I had a friend of mine who was stationed on a boomer sub back in the early 80s, and he said that when they would go out and do watch, when it was his turn, they had seen lights go down in the water and sometimes would follow and circle around the sub. And I was like, whoa, of course, I never know. He used to make up a lot of stuff, too. But I could kind of believe him on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I find those cases to be absolutely fascinating. Indeed, I can't believe this hour has taken off so quickly. And thanks in part to Zachariah Sitchin spending some time with us, who's going to be 90 years old this year. Truly amazing man. Truly is. And our program tomorrow, of course, is for you with a double-edged program. Mitch Batras for a couple hours talking about some incredible Earth changes, followed by a couple hours of Richard C. Hoagland reacting to NASA and budget and that Norway spiral. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy and Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.